Okay, we usually start
All
these.
right.
I think we usually start off with Heather from EPA or from HMTRI, giving us news from HMTRI and for Washington. I'll fill in for her. I
Oh,
think
I'm
she had.
actually here, Mike.
Oh, you are? Okay.
I
Okay.
am here, but it's not very
Okay.
exciting. There's no real news from HQ, and on the HMTRI side of things, we're just catching our breath and getting caught up on things since the all-grantee meeting. So nothing very exciting on my end.
Well, the good thing is you'll be posting all the materials from the all-grantee meeting, I believe, in shortly, in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
And perhaps some of the pictures from the meeting. And Ken was at that meeting, did a great job. We had, it was a great meeting, about 140 people. The best part of it is always just getting to know everyone. And actually, Ken's been at two of these meetings. Talk about that in a second. But it was a great time. But we do want to post the presentations and any recordings or any PowerPoints that we have. It takes a little while. We're still looking at notes and getting our participant list together and that type of thing. But we'll get those up there. I'll cover the news from Washington, which is those of you who may have not been at previous PLCs may not be aware of what's happening in EPA. Basically, the next RFP, request for proposals, will be about February, in the beginning of next year, 2019. They normally have it earlier in November, but they're doing some budgetary things and shifting things around. And so the next request for proposals will be first part of the year. And then they have 90 days when they announce it to actually do the physical writing and submit the proposal. And then
Okay.
that leaves you about June when they'll be making announcements. Now, the money doesn't go out in June. Money will actually, you have to go through some administrative things. And so the money will actually be awarded in October 1st. So it'll be of 2019, so next October. So what that does, if you look at a schedule, and I'll put these all in post-session notes. In fact, if you're not getting post-session notes, you'll be getting them. You'll get reminders. We have a master list and we have a PLC list. And the PLC list, Heather, do you want to give your address to get put on the PLC list?
Absolutely. So you can email me at hkballou@eicc.edu. Again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu.
And if you get post-session notes this week, we send them out on Friday, then you're on the list and you'll automatically stay on the list unless you want to be removed. And what the PLC notes do is they provide any websites or anything we do. It gives you opportunity to ask questions. And we go in a little bit more detail than we're able to do in the 30-minute or so conference call. So we'll do that and you can just get on the list and from there. So in terms of Washington, a little bit of disruption in the schedule, but we'll be able to get people training again in later part of 2019. Now, that may seem like a little bit of time, but what I'm going to point out in a second, this program to be successful takes a long time, not so much to write the proposal, maybe a month to write the proposal, 2 months, but the prep takes about that much time. In fact, we're talking about really starting now to do this because, as we'll talk about, you've got to get a lot of partners together. The one thing that I admire about Ken's program, and the more I learn about his program, the more I'm impressed. Ken started over a year before the RFP was his proposal was submitted. He went to an all-grantee meeting a year, not this last one, but the year before that. Now, he's unique in a lot of ways. One, he's the first workforce development project that was ever awarded in Indiana in the last 20 years. Two, he's doing something that nobody really has ever done. And we're talking about solid waste recycling and solid waste jobs. This program is funded by the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response. They give about $1.2 million or $1.3 to the cause. And often, many of the proposals go in a lot of other directions, but his is solid right on in this whole area of solid waste, recycling, disposal, and jobs. And so it's a very, very impressive program. The other thing that really impressed me about his program is he's building in sustainability, not only with some help from other federal agencies like Department of Labor, but he's got a program that I'll let him talk about that's generating its own sustainability. He's working with ex-offenders. The ex-offenders are the hardest. Ex-offenders and drug people with drug offenses who are ex-offenders or may have a habit they can't get rid of are the two most difficult graduates to place. And he's working with ex-offenders, and he's giving them a chance. And I'll put it in the notes, but I would encourage you to go to his website and look at the blogs. I read through every one of those blogs. And as I read those blogs, I heard what was happening to those kids who were getting out of jail, didn't have a chance, didn't have a place to go. They didn't have a place to stay. They didn't have a cell phone. And by going into Ken's organization, they got all of those things. And for that, I'm going to introduce Ken Alexander, who, and then we'll talk a little bit about his program. Ken?
All right. Thanks, Mike. Thank you for allowing me to present today as well. And thanks to all those that are listening. You did cover a lot of things that we do as partnering with Solid Waste and we're electronic recycling facility, and we focus on helping ex-offenders to get job training and job placement. So, it's a social enterprise, which makes it very unique for creating sustainability. Individuals will come here, and it's good for anyone that is unemployed or underemployed to get some instant employment and job training certifications. So, it's very unique because when we came to the conference in 2017, we didn't get the grant, but we found out exactly what we needed to do to get the grant and found out a lot more that was unique to what we're doing and how we can build on it to become a grantee in 2018. So this past function conference was really good, and we learned a whole lot, and we shared a whole lot. So what makes our unique is the fact that we also have youth between the age of 18 and 24, which is also a hard population to train and try to provide employment opportunities for them. And we also have the adult population as well. So we start our day. When I was down there at the conference, I shared how we start our day off with maybe a group of 20 in a circle. It can go all right. We have already had all the way up to about 120 individual men and women in our program, ex-offenders. We have a morning circle that we stress attendance. So, and we sit by age, from the youngest to the elders, which we found out that when we have the younger population, they learn from the older population that has walked the walk and talked the talk, and it kind of wakes them up to encourage them to be in the program and get some of the certifications. So with the older population, they pretty much run our recycling facility. It's an electronic recycling organization, and we did over about 12.5 million pounds a year and a half ago and continue to grow, which helps with the grant. It supplements some of the income. So that's where our sustainability comes in at. And with the solid waste industries, we have partnered with the solid waste industries because they cannot, send all this stuff to the landfills. So we have relationships with solid waste. We have relationships with the city of Indianapolis, to provide what we call tox drops every Saturday to pick up, you know, stuff that you can't take to the landfill, primarily electronics, anything with a cord on it. So we have these tox drops 3 times a month, and it creates additional employment opportunities for those that are in our training program. And those that come in, you know, they get the OSHA training to work in our warehouse, and then we also have a relationship with construction companies and that industry to provide the HAZWOPER training and that type of things that will hopefully transfer to permanent employment. So, yeah, so we think that we have found something that pretty much works, that will create sustainability, create partnerships, create jobs. And so once we try to guarantee at least 120 days employment for individuals that come into our program. We don't have a problem getting people in our program, but we want to emphasize those 5 critical principles for being in our program, which is attendance. They must attend, and they must have productivity, responsibility, initiative, and hopefully turn into leadership. And then we have been here, I've been here about 10 years. We've getting ready to have a building built on a brownfield. So we have opened up our bidding process to some contractors, and they will employ some of our people to work on the brownfield. So it's a whole lot of things that are happening with Recycle Force that makes this a very timely grant that we received for 2018. So, yeah, if anybody have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Yeah, Ken, I have a lot, and you're being very modest. You've gotten Department of Labor grants for transition of ex-offenders into the workforce. You're philanthropic. You have received many awards and grants from foundations. I was reading about one recently, an $80,000 grant just to buy KeyBank, I believe, to help you with your organization. It sounds like you're well established in the community as being the place of transition for ex-offenders, aren't you?
Yes, yes. We were chosen by the Department of Labor. I guess we got 2 back-to-back grants. One was about $5.8 million, and it was a study that was done by ETJD that we would take in 500 ex-offenders, and then it was a randomization process that they would compare 500 that got into our program with the 500 that did not get in our program, and they studied them for about 3 years. And I, to see how it impacted the recidivism rate. And after the 2-year study, the third year concluded that those that were in our program were less likely to recidivate. We had about 17% recidivization against the national over 50%. So we had that grant for a couple of years. A couple of times when they had initiated it. So
that and so the other thing is, I gather you're a little different in that many of our grantees will have a cohort. They will bring someone. They'll do the traditional. They've got a target group. They're doing they're looking at choosing their target community. Then they'll do some awareness training. They'll have some awareness nights, and then they'll start screening applications like we talked about. They might have tryouts, or they'll have some, because they could allow only so many people in, and then they'll go through the cohort training course after course, and then they'll go into a placement. I got the impression in reading through your websites that you're a little different in that you're bringing in people all the time. And I know, you know, this is the first time we've ever had a first-year grantee on, too. You're ramping up. What I like about your program is you've got a program going, but by securing this grant, you're able to add this environmental component onto it that'll actually enhance your program in terms of the hazardous materials. And I guess you also do some deconstruction. But how does that work in terms of bringing people into your program?
Well, you know, we have a relationship with community corrections, oversight agencies, with people on home detention, and also the court system. Instead of them sending them back for a technical rule violation, they will send them to our organization, and they will get some training. So we have a good referral system. And then we have a partnership with alternative staffing agency, ones in particular that's in our building that seeks contracts with hazardous waste organizations. One is U.S. Ecology that will hire individuals after they get trained and certified in HazWhopper or 10-hour construction, 30-hour construction. So with those relationships, we don't have a problem getting people in, and we don't have a problem with when people even leave, because they will, you know, sometimes they eventually come back. But, you know, as I emphasize those, you know, those crucial standards that we look for when people come in, is we, you know, we just hark on attendance, production, responsibility, initiative, and leadership. So the selective process is they gear where they want to go, we set the standard, and we hold their feet to the fire on that. And so
So it's almost, your model is going to be interesting, because it's almost a one-on-one versus this mass training where they're coming in on a regular basis. You're evaluating and seeing if it's a good fit. Evidently, there probably has to be some testing to make sure they can do the training, you know, do some of it. But your organization also helps them get GEDs. So, I mean, you're allowing them to get their high school equivalency. So you're almost kind of bringing them in on a continuous basis. Is that about right?
That is correct. We are partnering with a company that does the HSC, high school equivalent. So we do the TAPE testing to see what level of education they're on, and then we do an individual career plan. If they have a GED, or if they don't have a high school education, if they only can read at a fourth grade level, we enroll them in the HSE program, and it may take a week or two before they pass that the TAPE test, and then they get enrolled and to complete their HSE, and then while they're in the HSE, they'll come maybe 3 days out of the week to get the training, 2 days out of the week for HSE. And, you know, it's a win-win situation, because they're completing the HSE. They're raising their TAPE test score up, and then they're also getting certification training.
Mm-hmm. And so you're partnering. You've got a broad range of partners, don't you? Are these partners, and it took you, like I said, you spent over a year, almost 2 years, really, getting this thing together as far as the EPA grant. It sounded like, now you probably had some of these already established, but it sounded like you've got a real deep set of partners that you're relying on.
Yeah, that's very important to our success, is to make sure that we've got these solid partnerships, and even creating true job partners as well. We have a construction roundtable that, you know, we built during the DOL, Department of Labor grant, where these contractors that had contracts with the city and with the state, and they had to hire so many from the community or hub zones or what have you, and then they bought into what we were doing in our training program, and we were able to fill some of their needs to complete their, you know, their contract commitments, and then also fill some of the positions that were where individuals were retiring. So there are some people that have a heart to do construction work, and through our training, they were able to select the ones that will be a good fit for them.
What's
so we've been
is,
build up a community of partners through yeah. the DOL that makes it unique now, and even with this grant, as being one of the grantees now.
Yeah, it's great because I also read that you're doing some deconstruction work. So I think it's pretty catchy. Anything with a plug, you'll help haul away, deconstruct it. An interesting word, mechanical deconstructing, but you're also doing house deconstructing where, you know, if you need to get into lead and asbestos certifications, you guys are going to have the Hazwoper and the certs that you need to go in to clean out a house if you need to.
Yes. So, yeah, we provide all that training.
Yeah. Now, do you have... what do you do about drug testing? Just as a question, you know, at the conference we're all over the place and everyone does it differently. Some you can't get into the program if you test positive. Some it's in the program, you do random testing. Some you don't place. And we'll get to this in a second because your placement is a little different too than everyone. Mm-hmm. But Do you do any drug testing, or how did that work?
Well, that's very interesting because 90% of all those is being referred in our program. Well, I won't say 90%, but the large percentage of them has already been over some oversight, and they have to do random drug testing. They have to attend court order drug classes, and then anything should happen while they're in our training program, we'll do a drug test as well. So some of them are already under court order to be clean and stay clean and do random drug drops. They may call them when they report here. And the unique thing about our organization is they can go, we understand that they're in a program and they're also employed. So we understand some of the commitments that they have to make through the courts to go do random drug testing, and we will allow them to clock out and do what they have to do and come back.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, part of our training model as well is that if something should happen, then they're required to go get drug tested, and if it comes back positive, they would have to get clean before they come back into the program. Or they may even face some heavier restrictions over their probation officer or their oversight or community correction. So there's a large incentive for them to stay clean.
You know, I don't think it's come up in our discussions on drug testing. And a lot of these programs probably do have court-ordered drug testing for some of their participants or many of their participants. And that's a good point because there's always the next question, who does your drug testing, you know, and that varies as much as all the grantees of how you set it up. And I expect in your case, a lot of it is court ordered. So
a lot of it is court ordered, and I think most cities are dealing with this spice issue. And so when I was at the conference, they can do 12 to 25 different tests that will cover the synthetic drugs that people are doing. So we also, you know, because those, because they're employed as well, we have a workers' comp agencies that work with us, and they have to be tested for all those, any
with
type
the
of drug that they may be on. Yeah.
Like with the
so
insurance
it's part
company?
Of our insurance, yes.
So now this is interesting because some of your students are they're not getting stipends, they're working. So they're doing some part-time work, and a lot of them are working for you, aren't they, while they're getting the training?
That's correct. So, yeah, the day one that they come in and they complete the application process, that's when they are employed.
So they become employees of you, kind of, in many cases. Do all of them come in as employees to you?
All of them come in as employees, and they understand that they're
somebody
in a...
Android.
Yeah, they understand that they're in a, social enterprise. We're a profit and a nonprofit organization.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
So they're in a program, and then they're also employed in a business.
Mm-hmm. That's another unique thing about your program is that you've got, and we recommend this often, is to have a nonprofit and a profit arm. The nonprofit allows you to apply for the DOL and the philanthropic sustainability grants, and then you have your for-profit that allows you to work on either what it could be a small business loan or it could be a for-profit. But then the for-profit could help support the nonprofit and exactly what you're doing.
And that's
so
exactly how it works.
You're very unique. I would encourage people to look at your blogs. I remember reading one blog, a gentleman said, you know, Recycle Force helped me get, I pay for my cell phone through Recycle Force. You think about it, you get out of prison, you have no phone, you have no credit, you have nothing. And the impression I got after reading his blog, it says, I was able to go to work for Recycle Force, and they got me a phone. I could pay them for the phone, and now I have a phone, which I never had, you know, which is things like that. You all do an incredible amount of mentoring. I'm sure that you don't – when I read what you're doing, it reminds me of what Arch Hanks is doing up in Oakland. He works with the courts very closely. He's mentoring his kids. They're not kids. They're adults. But he's mentoring. He's working with them. I like what you're doing in terms of having the older participants mentor the young participants.
Matter of fact, Mike, let me cut you off, but the peer mentoring is a major component of our organization, the peer mentorship. We have individuals that have walked the walk and talked the talk and have learned how to navigate, through the criminal justice system as well as navigate through how to be a good employee. That is one of the major keys, is because a lot of the individuals come and they have, and some of them it's their first job, some of them have not been able to keep a job for over 30, 60, or 90 days. And so individuals that have became peer mentors have encouraged them, others how to, you know, how to succeed, how to deal with difficult supervisors, how to deal with all type of discriminatory actions, because they had already been there. So our peer mentoring is a major part of our organization. And then we have partnered with an organization called Trusted Mentors, which is more of a professional mentoring agencies that partner with us to do some one-on-one with our participants to walk alongside with them. I mean, even after they're off. So they may get with them at 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night. They make themselves available to deal with some of the family issues that they may have. So that is a major part of our program. And I will contribute a lot of the success of those that are looking to be employed and make a good living to get a mentor.
You know, that's interesting because many grantees will farm out to a social services organization, caseworker, which they probably already have all those. But what's more important than that is having a peer mentor in the program that could help them out. That's fantastic. Now, if someone doesn't get a job, they can just stay where they're at until you get them a job or help them get a job, it sounds like, because you've got plenty of work for participants to do. It sounds like you just move them to the other organization. Is that correct?
That is correct, and that's why the alternative staffing organization that works with us is very key, because they can go to temp to perm jobs. We try to keep them here employed as long as we can. Sometimes it's over a year, maybe close to 2 years, but as long as we've got work that can help supplement, you know, their employment, we will keep them here.
Anyone have any questions? Ken's program is very unique, and it's going to be interesting to follow you along as you progress. And it's so different, but it seems like it has the potential for being an incredibly successful program, which you already are successful. But I think adding this environmental component is going to be incredible, because you're going to be able to perhaps expand into lead, more deconstruction, asbestos, offer additional services in addition to what you're already offering in terms of removing hazardous materials. We haven't even gotten into all the state and federal certificates you need just to get where you're at, but it's a very impressive program. We do try to limit these conversations to about 30 minutes. So anyone have any questions, Ken?
Yeah, hi, this is Randy Humphrey. Oh, sorry.
That's all right. Go ahead.
Okay, so this is the Amani Group. I was wondering two questions. So are the participants, are they compensated through the grant? And what did you change from the first to the second time you applied that you think helped you get it?
Oh, wow. Let me try to answer the first one. The first one is, yes, they're through our accounting, we have cost allocation. So part of their pay is funded through a grant, and part of their pay is funded through the work that they do.
Not the EPA grant. They can't do it through the EPA grant, but that's a different grant that they're getting stipends.
Right. So yeah, this is just for the training with the EPA. And what did we do different? Well, you know, I think there was a few things that we had to clarify with getting the grant. And I don't know all the details in that, but
you know, I'll wager a guess just by. You all are very modest, and when I look at what you're doing, if someone were to ask me, and I haven't even seen the grant, okay, that one of the things that, which why you wouldn't might have gotten it right off the bat, because you've got such a solid program, is in that grant, they only know what they read in that grant. And we'll talk about this at later PLC, but they're going to ask certain ranking criteria. And they don't know anything about anything in terms of the original coordinators. They know about programs. But you could say one thing, and you've got 20 other things that everybody assumes. You assume that you're doing all those things, but they don't know that. So they assume you're not doing any of those things. So this is a part of the artsmanship of grant writing, is on every, and we'll talk about this when we get closer, but on every ranking criteria question, you have to go in the assumption that whoever reads that knows nothing about your program, and they're only going to know what you put into the answer. And usually that's the reason why what I see is that I see outstanding programs don't get funded. Yeah,
so I think we have to create more details, and as though no one knew anything about our program, and hit those critical indicators to make sure that they knew exactly what we were doing from start to finish and how we were going to do it, who was our partners, and Yeah, so just taking a different approach at it as though they didn't know anything about it, what we do.
Hi, this is Renee from St. Louis Community College, and I was wondering if you do you solely work with that population, or do you serve other populations as well, you know, people just unemployed or low skilled, that kind of thing. And I'm also wondering how many students through the EPA grant, or I guess it seems like you have a lot of mixed funding, but I guess through the EPA grant, how many students do you serve overall?
Well, you know, part of our mission is to just deal with the ex-offender, those returning to citizenship, although with some of our administrative staff, we do employ, you know, other populations besides ex-offenders.
Mm-hmm.
And your second question, what was that again?
Just how many you serve.
Well, we're going to do 50 over the next 2 years and train them and provide job opportunities for them as well. And those are non-subsidized employment.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Anything else?
Tell us a little bit about your background and how you started with Recycle4Us, or how long you've been there?
Well, I've been with Recycle4Us for 10 years, and my background is I was the program director of an organization called Technical Training Services, where I trained in plumbing, carpentry, electrical, HVAC. I trained in 10 hours and 30 hours of OSHA 1910, which is general industry, OSHA 1926, which is construction. And I also trained in lead abatement and certified now doing the HAZWOPER and then EPA 608, which is associated with HVAC, you know, to properly remove freon and protect the ozone layer. So I have an extensive background, probably over 30 years in training and certifying individuals in the trades.
As I read the blogs, it's not Ken Alexander, it's Mr. Alexander. And it shows you the mentoring. I mean, you could read it in a blog and what they did for him. And you're hands-on, Ken. You're not, you may be an administrator, but I know you got you're into the program big time. I could tell.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Totally hands-on.
That's great.
And we don't try to tell individuals where they want to take their career or where they want to get their training at. So when we do the individual career plan, we let them tell us where they want to go, and we help them to get there.
Well, Ken, I'm going to, if it's all right with you, I'll put your contact information in the post-session notes so people could give you a call on the side or email you, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that's fine. It's perfectly fine.
We appreciate it. You know, this is, like I say, this is you're just getting into the EPA side of this, so this is going to be kind of interesting to watch this, see how it goes for you. So I appreciate you talking to us.
Okay, I appreciate you inviting me to present here.
Okay. If there's more questions, we're going to, our next PLC will be September 12th, so we'll... hopefully we'll see all then, same time, same place.
Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot, Mike.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.